Today on Rambling About Cars, Koenigsegg, Bugatti, Lamborghini, Lucid, Rimac, all kinds of debuts to talk about at Pebble Beach. But you want to stick around for the second half of the show because we actually had people on the ground checking all of these things out. And not just anybody gets into Pebble Beach. So this is going to be a firsthand look that you probably won't find very many other places. And we have the best team in the business. So without further ado, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith and Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. And we have some special guests with us.
We do. I'm super excited about the show tonight. So we have Brett T. Evans and Jeff Perez, both editors at Motor1.com. Both of them attended the Monterey Car Week, all of the various events for us this year. And I didn't realize before this was both their first time going there. So I'm super excited to hear about what they thought about things. But before we get into that, as always, like, subscribe, comment. Yeah. You folks know about that. But I want to let our guests introduce themselves. Just they've been on the show before, but it's been a while. So, Brett, you're to the right of me on the screen right now. Go ahead and introduce yourself. And then, Jeff, you get the next shot.
The upper right corner.
Exactly.
I'm Brett Evans. I've been a senior editor at Motor One for like 2.5 years now. I loved Monterey Car Week. I had a great time. I think I have a future career in me as a hanger-oner of multi-million dollar cars. I think that's probably
a future career as a rich guy is what you're saying.
No, not a rich guy, a guy who hangs around rich guys and just like sits in their cars and stuff. That's pretty much all I have going for me. So yeah.
Okay. Jeff.
Yes. Yeah. Jeff Perez. I am senior editor as well as Brett Evans. I've been here at Motor One, 4 years now, 5 years. And we had a great time at Pebble. Like you said, it was a lot to take in our first time, but it was good.
Well, Jeff, you're used to some of the highbrow kind of expensive treatment because the last time you were on the show, you were telling us about your helicopter ride into Goodwood. You were too good to go car spotting in the parking lot. That's because right. you're riding the helicopter into the show. But no,
yeah. Jeff, you've had a good year, man.
I have. I'm a very fancy boy. So, you know, I tend to do fancy boy things and that's just my life. So.
All right. Well, let's kick it off. So we wanted to kick it off with some of the debuts from Monterey Car Week that we hadn't covered previously. We're going to start things off with the Koenigsegg CC850. They debuted that at the show. Smith, if you could vamp for me for just a second while I pull this image up here and tell the
folks. Well, I could do more than vamp because I wrote this thing, and this was one of those where there was no embargoed information ahead of time. Hell, there wasn't even a press release when this thing came out. It was just all of a sudden on social media. So we were scrambling a little bit, but it was worth it because this is, I mean, when you look at it, it's like, okay, that's the original. That's the first Koenigsegg they built, right? The CC8.
Kind of like, it's a little smoother. It's a little smoother.
The interior is certainly updated. It's essentially a Jesko underneath. It's got the same twin turbo 5-liter V8. It's got the same 9-speed transmission.
It's got the same less power though.
It's less power. It's detuned.
Slightly. But let's say real quick, less power means on pump gas, this thing makes, let me get my numbers right, 1,185 horsepower.
On pump gas. But if you give it E85, that's 1,385 horsepower. So
right.
It's still insanely fast. And what makes this neat is that it has a 6-speed gated manual transmission, but wait, Smith, didn't you just say this has the 9-speed automatic? It kind of has both because Koenigsegg, they developed this gated 6-speed manual gear lever with a third pedal. It has an actual clutch pedal and you can switch it into manual mode and you have to work the clutch pedal and you have to shift the gears through 6 speeds. It's not mechanically linked to the 9-speed transmission, though. It's an electronic affair. But Koenigsegg, they say they spent a lot of money on developing the system, developing the feedback to make it feel like a proper manual. If you have it in manual mode and you don't work the clutch right, you know, like when you were trying to learn to drive on your brother's Ford Escort, it'll stall. It'll just completely die out on you. But it's a 6-speed gated manual, but there are 9 speeds. How does that work? Koenigsegg says there are multiple drive modes and you can select between the different drive modes that will give you a different combination of gears for each drive mode. So you still have access to all nine gears, but in any particular drive mode, when you're in manual mode, you're only going to be able to access six, or you can just flip it over to automatic mode.
Right. So you, to reiterate what you're saying, you have a six speed and you're looking at it here. You have a six speed gated shifter that you use a clutch with. Depending on the drive mode, the gear ratios change. But you say, eh, my leg's tired today. I don't want to do that stuff. That you can put it over into a setting and it becomes a fully automatic nine speed.
That's right. You can do the Clint Simone. You can put it into automatic, drive across town and not have any worries about trying to shift it.
And when you show up, you still get the cred of driving a manual transmission. No one needs to know that you had it in automatic mode that whole time.
Yeah, it's I mean, I've seen comments of people saying, fake. You know what? I will reserve judgment on this until I have a chance to drive it.
Until you've driven it?
Which is probably going to be never, because they're only making 50, except...
No, they are not. Oh, damn you.
Nope. Go ahead, Bruce. You caught me.
So I wrote up this story today. The response was so good that they went back and they decided to make 20 more.
They'll make 20 more.
Right. So Christian von Koenigsegg came out and he said, we went to... So basically, they went to their very, very loyal clients, the people who put in the first reservations for this. They said, hey, do you mind if we make more? They checked with them first. Those folks apparently said, yeah, sure, fine, go ahead. So rather than making 50 of these things, they're making 70.
And sweet, as I point that out, puts me back on the list, man.
Right. We still don't know the price, but as I pointed out in the story, it's in the millions. Like,
it's
in the millions. So if you've got a few million to spare, you, if you act really quickly, you might still be able to get one of these, because all 50 were sold out as soon as they debuted it.
Well, I mean, I have my Mazda 6 up for sale, so that should more than cover the cost.
That'll free up some cash. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. Now, Jeff, I mean, you were there when they pulled the covers off this, were you not?
At Apple? Yeah, I was there at the Quail. So the Quail was on Friday. And I was there to see it debut, and then Christian got in, he turned it on, he revved it. I posted a video on our Instagram account. You know, if you haven't seen that, go see it, but it's amazing in person. I mean, it does definitely look like the old CCX or CC8, whatever it was.
And C8. Yeah.
C8. And it has those like retro vibes, but it's got all the new, you know, the headlights, the interior, the taillights. It looks really good. It looked to me better than any other car on that stage. Like, the Jesco to me is cool, but this thing is just so much cooler. And then the manual, or the semi, you know, the automatic manual thing, I think
whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yeah, I think though that's like such an amazing, like, that's how you save the manual gearbox from just disappearing entirely, right? Because younger people, I don't think, are going to really care about the manual long term, like the Miata or, you know, a Veloster N or something like that. But if there's a way this technology could make its way to cheaper cars, there's no reason you shouldn't buy a manual, quote unquote, you know, Civic or whatever. Like, it's amazing. I honestly don't even know how they came up with that sort of technology.
I bet they were watching a lot of like the sim racing Facebook pages where these guys are making these just ridiculously overly complicated manual gearboxes for like iRacing and such. I have no idea if that's actually the case.
I mean,
seeing some of those builds, this sort of reminds me of that a little bit, because they are trying very hard to get the most accurate feedback possible, where it doesn't just feel like you're flipping a switch. It feels like you have actual engagement going on with that gear lever. And it does have an official name. Do you guys want to know what it's called?
Go for it. I've got it.
I've got it right here. I'll do the acronym for the official name. The acronym is TWMPAFMPC transmission.
FWAMPIC.
It stands for the world's most powerful and fastest manual production car, which Koenigsegg claims this is. I suspect there will be some people raising a little bit of a stink because there's no direct
They're only making 70 of these. Those people don't matter.
Yeah.
Like, they've sold them. Koenigsegg doesn't care. They've sold all of these damn things. Like, they're like, yeah, complain all you want. We, the checks are in the bank.
I can't hear you over this $100 million. What? No, very, very, very cool car. And yeah, we were scrambling a little bit to write this up, but obviously go to motor1.com. You can read all about it right there. What else we got here? What's next on the docket, Bruce? We got a big schedule here.
We do. Let's talk about the Bugatti Mistral, because you guys also check that out and you did a really kind of cool little Easter egg post for it. And that is about the wild little elephant in amber in the gear shift, which we're showing the folks on YouTube here. Mm-hmm. So,
Go ahead. I was gonna say, I mean, let's tell folks a little bit about the car first before we get into the Easter egg. This is Bugatti's Roadster that they were teasing leading up to the debut. I believe, Bruce, when we recorded last week, we had just received embargoed information on this car. This was one of the debuts last week where we were saying, we know cool stuff is coming. You're going to want to stick around. Obviously, this is basically, it's another reskin Chiron, right? It's got the same W16. Bugatti says this will be the last gas before the big W16 engine, but it's still the same 1,577 horsepower. And Bugatti very much wants to be the fastest roofless car once again. Although a while ago they said, we're not interested in chasing records anymore. So whether they actually try to post an official top speed of this, we don't know. It doesn't matter. I think it looks cool. I think it looks very cool. Styling, it's influenced sort of by 1930s style from the Type 57.
A little bit.
I think it's
wide nose and some of the other features of Bugatti's old race cars. It's not a total rip off of the Chiron, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Right. You know, a little bit of Devo in there, a little bit of the noir in there. Mm-hmm. Obviously the taillights, the X taillights, kind of scream boldy. So
yeah, it's got a lot of, it's maybe not my favorite personally. I think the design's a little busy, but it definitely has some of those cues you've seen on Devo, especially on the front end.
Yep.
The taillights are almost identical to Bolide. The rear diffuser is actually, it's not from the 300 plus model, but it's somewhere in between the base Chiron and the 300 plus. It's a little bit longer. The front grill is wider, like you said, which I actually kind of like. I don't like the typical narrowness of that weird, you know, door kind of shape. And then there's the interior with that fun little Easter egg in the shifter. So it's definitely
tell
cool.
us about that.
Yeah, tell us, please.
You guys wrote up that story for us, because that's kind of something neat.
And nobody else really picked up on it. So kind of an exclusive here for Mr. Perez.
Well, they made a little bit of a note in it, I think, in the press release, but I didn't see any pictures or anything. And I was talking to Frank Hale, who's the deputy. I don't want to get his title wrong. He is the deputy design director. And he basically, you know, helps make this car with his team. And one of the things I always ask, I guess, at this point, having done these and so many times, it's like, what's like a little Easter egg or something fun you really like about this car? And that was the first thing he pointed out. And he gave me the whole story of Rembrandt Bugatti and how he was a sculptor and he would go to the zoo and go sculpt the animals. And so the dancing elephant was on the front of the Bugatti Royale in the 20s, I think. And so that was their, you know, one of their iconic looks for a while, and they brought it back. I don't have this in the story or in the quotes, but I want to say this is the first time we've seen the dancing elephant on the Chiron platform. I don't think any other Chiron models. I don't know if the Bolide has.
Sounds right.
Yeah, so this is pretty cool, and it's in amber, which is very Jurassic Park esque. So I thought that was a fun little thing. It's super cool. Yeah.
Sorry.
And the picture you took, it almost looks like there's a little mosquito behind it in amber. I know it's not, but the way you took that picture, that's what it looks like.
It's well done.
Totally. So let's go ahead and move on to the Lamborghini Urus Performante. I hope I'm saying that right. Damn you Italians and your many, many vowels.
Urus perform. Yeah, the Lambo.
But the Lambo. Finally, We have been writing about the updated Urus for, I'm going to conservatively call it, ages. Smith, you and I with spy shots and stuff like that. And we finally got to see it. It doesn't look appreciably different. It, you know, it kind of, it gets some vents in the hood up front, which makes it look a little bit more aggressive. It has some extra vents at the back as well, but it also now makes 666 horsepower, which.
And was that on purpose, Lamborghini? Come on.
Guaranteed. A company that makes a car, that made a car called the Diablo, knows exactly what they're doing. Giving a car 666 horsepower.
Yes. Now,
the weirdest thing about this thing, though, is that it actually ditches the standard Urus's air suspension. It's got steel springs. So instead of going more advanced, they went kind of old school with the suspension. And they did that because they really want it to feel consistent and to feel kind of sharp and old school. I'm going to point out on that picture right there, my favorite image, my favorite detail is the little blackout.
Sorry.
The first one, the little blackout on the hood. They did that because they want the windshield to look longer and they want it to kind of have like a truncated front deck, like an original Countach would, which, you know, it kind of works. Like when you're looking at it and viewing it through that lens, it's kind of a neat little, little trick that they're trying to play on.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting.
Now that you mentioned it. Yeah, you're right. That's clever. That is actually quite clever.
And but, I also found it interesting. This sits just a little bit lower than a regular Urus, like just under an inch lower. But they also gave it a new rally mode, which usually when you're talking about something with a rally mode for off-road, it's going up a little bit, right? But, you know, this time they dropped it a little bit and gave it a rally mode. Of course, I mean, some of the teasers and spy shots we saw showed this thing off-road. This is the Urus that set the record at Pike's Peak, the recent record at Pike's Peak, is the Performante. So
they actually had the car they used there.
Okay.
On Sunday at Pebble Beach, they had it fully wrapped up still. So it was cool.
Fully wrapped. Cool. It's a little bit longer. They have some extra aero plugged in there. It's got, I think, like 38% more downforce on the rear. Some small changes inside. They give it some new graphics, you know, some special graphics for the displays. But yeah, the Urus Performante. Why the hell can't I say that? Performante. I clearly don't have enough cool in my aid here.
And for any for anyone who listened to Rambling About Cars last week, you will know Smith and I had a bet, and we both lost. You betted that they were going to debut three cars at Pebble Beach. That because we know... Lamborghini has said, we are going to debut three cars during this month. We are fairly certain two of them are Urus variants. One of them is a Huracan. I figured we would see this and the Huracan Sturato, both at Pebble Beach. I was wrong. We did not.
I was wrong.
See all three vehicles at Pebble Beach, and we didn't. This is all that they debuted. It's now, as we record this, it is the 24th of August. Lamborghini's running out of time to debut these other vehicles that they have promised to debut. So,
Jeff or Brett, did you two hear anything about what, you know, what other debuts might be cooking?
No, we thought the Sturato would be there too, at least. But then, you know, once we started talking to Lamborghini on a few days beforehand, we figured, you know, it was just the Urus. But, yeah, that's weird. I mean, I don't know. There definitely was supposed to be three debuts this month. So who knows? Maybe they squeeze them in before the end of the month.
Well, I mean, yeah, the month isn't over yet. Nope. We're sort of in that period of, at least for the United States, okay, we just came off of two very big events, the Woodward Dream Cruise, Monterey Car Week. Now we have just a couple weeks before we move into the Labor Day holiday when everybody's out doing their last little bits of summer. It's usually kind of a quiet time in automotive land. So could Lamborghini use this quiet time to bust out two more debuts? I think so.
Yeah.
It seems like they're going to have to. I'm just going to try to pull up the story here real quick just to show to anyone who missed last week.
Or it could be, I mean, they could be delayed. There's still a little bit of that going on in the entire world right now. So
totally. Here, vamp for me for just a half a second while I pull this link up and just show folks.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll mention.
Here. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have to vamp for you, Bruce. You're too damn fast.
I was, I was too damn fast. But yeah, like they said in their financial report that we were going to see three debuts in August. We've seen one. I'm curious. They're running out of time to get the other two out. So could be if you're a Lamborghini fan, end of August could be very exciting times.
Stay tuned, Motor1.com.
What would be the other Urus? Maybe like an STO? They wouldn't do that right after Performante. Oh, okay.
You wouldn't think so, but that's the rumor. But yeah.
Yeah.
Weren't they testing like a lifted Urus or anything like that? Kind of a more rally ready one?
Theoretically, that might be the STO, at least in production. I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I'm kind of just talking out of my butt here. So,
well, I mean, yeah. Given the sales success of Urus, if I were Lamborghini, I guess I would be thinking, how many more variations of these can we pump out?
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
It certainly makes sense there.
So, Jeff, the spotlight's going to be on you for this one because you actually got to drive this car in Pebble Beach, and I have not heard what it was like to drive, and I am very, very curious. The Remots, I'm going to say this wrong because I have every time in our pre-production, Navara, did I get it right this time?
Yep, that's right.
This time you did. You got it.
Yeah,
it is.
But I was today years old when I learned that's not Remock. It's Remots.
Remots.
So I've only been mispronouncing that for like 3 years now. So thank you. Well,
I learned that for the first time at Pebble Beach or at the Quail. They told me it was Remots, which I guess makes sense if it's a Croatian word, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did get to drive it on Sunday before I left, and it is the fastest thing I've ever been in my life, and that's not even an exaggeration.
Well, it has, for anyone who's not familiar, it has 1,914 horsepower, so that's plenty.
It's a little bit.
That's a healthy number.
It'll get out of its own way just fine.
Yeah.
So, but no, dude, you got to tell, what is that like? Like on a public road, do you just like a quarter throttle and you're at, you know, how do you drive 45 in that?
Well, so one of the things that they really, really wanted to make sure we understood, and anybody who buys this car understands, is that the numbers, as crazy as they are, because every number is insane, I think 0 to 60 is 1.85 seconds, they don't want you to be intimidated by those numbers. They want you to get in this car and drive it like you would any other grand touring car. And you can absolutely do that, which is insane because it's got so much power and so much torque. You don't think that you're going to be able to just control this thing and drive at 40 miles an hour and be totally fine, but you can. The interior is nice and comfortable. Like there's a big touchscreen. Like it feels very normal, albeit from the, I don't know why everybody's doing this now, because this is like a Tesla thing, but every single function you have to go through the touchscreen. So you can't adjust the seat or the steering wheel without going through the touchscreen, which is annoying. So it was hard to find a seating position, but that's a very small gripe for driving a $2 million car. Once you accelerate, though, it is another planet of speed. It's, like I said, the fastest thing I've ever driven, faster than the Bugatti I drove. It feels more comfortable than the Bugatti I drove. I think it probably handles a little bit better than the Chiron. Like, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing car.
Well, and when we're talking about horsepower at this level, I mean, that it requires a different context here, because I think people will latch on to 0 to 60 in 1.8 seconds. But honestly, I mean, you can do that in an 800 horsepower car if you have a good set of tires at a drag strip and a good set of gears. On the street, I mean, it's really an issue of traction. But what's it like beyond 60? Because that's where I think you start to separate. Okay, we're talking about something that just accelerates good off the line versus something that just doesn't freaking stop going, right?
Yeah, it doesn't really stop. I mean, you have, because of the battery pack and because of the four electric motors, you obviously have instant torque, right? There's no lag. You're not waiting for turbos. You're not waiting for superchargers, whatever. You just have all the power you need, like for as long as you need it until you hit 240 or whatever the top speed is. But the interesting thing is, and I rode with one of their engineers, and I have his name written down, but I'm not even going to try and pronounce it because it's a very Croatian name. Super nice, but also clearly a maniac, because the second I got out of the driveway, he goes, punch it, put your foot all the way down. I was like, I'm in a 2000 horsepower car. I'm not doing that. So I like got brave enough to go 3/4 of the way down. And then we go into the first corner and he's like, put your foot all the way down into the corner. I'm like, oh, what? What are you saying? Like, put your foot all the way down to the floor. I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I put it maybe about halfway down. He's like, no, all the way. And I'm like, what are you trying to get me to do? What it is the torque vectoring on this car is reads the road conditions and the grip at 100 times per second. So you can go into a corner with your foot fully flat and it theoretically won't drive you off the cliff because the car is putting down the exact amount of power that you need in that corner. And it's pretty much guiding you around the corner in a way that I've never felt in any other car. And eventually I got brave enough to do it. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. It handles like a supercar. It handles like a hypercar. The steering's a little like, you know, it feels a little electronic, but for the most part, it's easily one of the best cars I've driven, and not just from a speed standpoint.
One of the cool things about electric hypercars is exactly what Jeff was just talking about, that you don't necessarily with a gas or an internal combustion hypercar that's got power that high, there's only so much you can do to rein it in when you are just driving to the grocery store, when you're just kind of like cruising around. So they always feel like they're on fire. And the cool thing about these electric hypercars is you can literally dial it back to 200 horsepower if you want to, or if you want to unleash all 1,904, well, not quite, but if you want to unleash 500 horsepower on one wheel and 0 horsepower on the others, you can do that too. Right. Like
So if you see in this picture, there are those two little knobs right in the center console. I think the one on the left was your drive mode selector. And so there are 7 drive modes. The most intense is track mode that like unleashes everything. There's a drift mode, and I think it sends, I don't know the exact number, but it sends most of the torque to the back wheels. And then there's a cruise, and there's an energy saving mode, right? And so when you tick the thing, it'll tell you what mode you're in, and then it'll tell you exactly how much horsepower and torque is being applied in that mode. Mm-hmm. So I think we were cruising in, I think it might have been called cruise mode or normal mode. And I want to say that the torque output was around 800 something, and the horsepower was maybe 11 or 12. I kind of looked over at it, but I didn't really do a good enough job of looking. And then you turn it to track and it shows everything. So yeah, like Brett said, you can absolutely dial it down and just go to the grocery store or, you know, drive around comfortably, and it doesn't feel like an absolute monster all the time.
So I'm going to take a moment to be devil's advocate here. And I really don't want to, because I think this car is amazing. I think the technology is amazing, but I know there will be people listening. And this has gone on since the very first iteration of traction control where, okay, me as the driver, I'm sitting behind the wheel, but the car is doing all of that work. What do you say to them when they bring these things up? Because, I mean, Jeff, you're talking about torque vectoring, flooring a 2,000 horsepower car going around a corner, and the car just takes you around it. And I'm going to gather that was a very exhilarating experience that you would like to repeat over and over and over again. What do you say to these people that comment about the electronic assists and the various control that the vehicle is taking on your behalf to keep you alive?
Well, so there's definitely the two opposite ends of the spectrum, right? So you have those cars that have no electronic assist or electronic assist that you can turn off completely. Like a Hellcat with no traction control is an absolutely insane car that if you know how to manage, it's a ton of fun. This, on the opposite end, has the most impressive modern, you know, performance technology that you've ever seen in a car. And it's a different experience, but it's just as good in the sense that I personally, when I'm driving on a track, at least, I want to know that this car has all the grip I need. all the time. Like, I'm not going to be drifting this thing. So in that sense, this car is amazing. Like, you will never run out of grip. You'll never run out of the ability to do what you want, because it's so smart. If you want to get crazy, there's definitely a drift mode that you can do that. So the technology is there to help you, but it's also, you can turn some of it off and still have a good time with it.
So here's what it sounds like to me. And Smith, you've played video games. It almost sounds like booting up Forza and you turn on the steering assist and the braking assist and all of that. And you can still have a hell of a lot of fun that way. Only this is the real world. You know, like, to me, like, part of me is like, oh, it's not as pure, it's not as analog, but those vehicles still exist. Like, go out, go get yourself a Caterham 7, and it's exactly that. But this is for maybe someone else, and I kind of like that it exists, especially after how much Jeff has talked about it, that, like, yeah, I kind of get it now, that the fact that you say, like, it is so sophisticated, that is reading the road so much that you can put your foot down and go through a corner and it's not going to kill you. It is not, you know, the Porsche 930 where it's the Widowmaker and you, oh my God, I'm going too fast. I take my foot off the gas and it spins around and shoots me into a tree and I'm dead now. But, like, yeah.
What people who complain about supercars, cars in general, not being involving enough, have they ever been on a roller coaster and smiled? Because if they have,
totally,
then they're not allowed to talk.
Great.
Yeah,
totally. Well and truly, and this is obviously not that. It's not you being completely divorced from the driving experience,
right,
and just along for the ride. Obviously you're still involved, but, like, there is something to be said for something that is just thrilling and hilarious and fun and safe and not gonna, right, rip your head off.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm for the record, I did not want to be devil's advocate, because I don't think there is a single person alive that will get behind that wheel of the Rimac Nevera. I got to keep saying that, otherwise I'm going to go back to Rimac. Rimac Nevera. There's not a person alive, professional racing driver or otherwise, that'll get behind that wheel, utilize all of that horsepower to its absolute limit on public streets. You shouldn't be doing that anyways. Or even on the track without some sort of intervention. It's just it's too much. And Jeff, when you crank the wheel, floor it into the corner, you're still turning the wheel, you're still pressing the gas, you are still in that process.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's not like, oh, I'm just gonna close my eyes and the force will take me around the corner. You're still driving the car. So yeah, that's but I know people are gonna ask about and complain about that. Oh, the Nevera does all the work. Oh.
You want to hear a quick fun story that
of course I do. Yes, that's why you're here.
So
we don't have fun on rambling about cars, Jeff. Sorry.
So I'm sure the listeners and viewers saw the story about how this exact car, the green one, was rear-ended by a motorcycle in Pebble Beach.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Our partners at Inside EVs covered that. I'll actually pull that story up right now.
Yeah, and so that's the car I drove. But as you probably can see, it's not busted because they overnighted the piece from Croatia and got it in SFO drove it from SFO to Monterey and fixed it. Yeah, it's crazy.
I got to be honest. As soon as you said overnighted, there is a switch in my head that flipped. Uh-huh. Overnight parts from Japan? Overnight parts from Japan?
I actually don't know. I think they might have overnighted an entire car. I'm not totally positive.
No.
They didn't.
I talked to their PR person, and she showed me the picture of the big carbon fiber bumper going through SFO on the on the little tram thing, and one of their engineers had his thumbs up, like, we did it, we got it.
Nice.
So thank God. I mean, the way the motorcycle hit, I guess it was just that carbon fiber piece, so they had an immediate replacement. They just had to get it from Europe.
Well, and it was actually down in Southern California, because we were supposed to drive it down here, like 2 weeks ago, and then they ended up having to cancel it, which is why Jeff got to swipe in and take that spot in Monterey.
Yeah.
But and yeah, so now, if you're watching on YouTube,
what was,
you can see
what was this collision? I didn't catch this. Okay, we're looking at it now.
A motorcyclist ran into the rear end of it while they were doing media drives earlier in the week.
I think it was in I might be wrong. I think it was in Malibu or maybe Angeles Crest.
Yeah.
And there was just a motorcyclist who was just, you can see him like on all fours right there, just realizing that he ran into a $2+ million car.
Yeah. And the Inside EV story says Santa Monica. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was over on PCH and it was just,
The guy in this image almost looks like he's doing the Wayne's World. Like, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Like, he just looks like I really messed up today.
Yeah. That's really what it looks like.
That's a day ruined for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm glad everybody was all right on that.
Yeah.
The car was repaired. Jeff, you had a great experience with it. Do we have time to talk about one more vehicle, you think, guys?
I think we totally do. Yeah, we got 10 minutes before we'll transition to the other stuff. But yeah, let's go from one high horsepower EV to another high horsepower EV. I actually wrote up this story for us. So this is the Lucid Air Sapphire, and this is their 3-motor version of the Lucid Air. It has finally debuted. Unfortunately, a lot of automakers have kind of started doing this. They're not being specific about the specs yet. They say it has over 1,200 horsepower. We don't know if that means it has 1,201 horsepower or 1,501 horsepower, but the number is over 1,200. We know that. And it is their 3-motor version. So it is kind of a Tesla Model S Plaid competitor. It is an electric sedan. You've got 2 motors at the back, 1 motor turning the front. Like I said, power is over 1,200 horsepower. We don't know exactly what that means yet. And some pretty impressive numbers. They are estimating 60 miles an hour in less than 2 seconds, 100 miles an hour in less than 4 seconds, and a quarter mile in less than 9 seconds. As we are recording this, they have started taking pre-orders for them. Prices start at $249,000 before destination in the United States. They started taking pre-orders on August 23rd. I don't know if they've sold out yet. I haven't been paying attention to that, if I'm honest. But I assume there's still some left. All of the initial production will come in this color sapphire blue that you're seeing, which is kind of a dark blue. And then the interior, is a mix of that color and what they're calling, is it Mojave beige, Mojave gray? Let me look. It's been a few days since I wrote this story.
Interior. I do rather like that color, but I have to be honest, I've always been very partial to blue.
Right. It's a very nice dark blue.
Yeah, I would really like to see that in person. Jeff or Brett, did either of you have a chance to take a look at it?
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it looked really good. And they have little like bear logos, like the California state flag all over the vehicle. I guess it's part of the sapphire trim, which I really liked. It looks really good.
Yep. It's on the headrest, and then it is also on some of the mechanical components. Let me see if I can find a good picture of the bear. Did they give a good here? You'll be able to see it. Whoops. Let me press the right button.
A tiny little bit.
Yeah. So it's on the headrest, but it is also on some of the mechanical components as well.
And this is kind of meant to like highlight the car's California provenance and heritage, kind of in a way that Tesla is the same way, but they're not taking advantage of it like Lucid is. So,
well, I mean, and Tesla, of course, in the last year or so, they've been making a little bit bigger of a deal about Texas and their operations there. Do you think this could be a little bit of a dig? Say, hey, we're California, baby.
Well, I'll tell you what the dig is that when they put out their release, they said,
preconditioning. Yeah, sorry. Yep.
Nope, that's exactly what it is that the automaker notes that there is no protracted preconditioning routine that is necessary to do a quarter mile sprint or anything like that. Whereas Tesla, famously, they have their China mode that kind of takes a moment to activate where the front end hunkers down, the rear end gets up. So there's like some cooling, I believe, of the batteries. I could be wrong. I think that's correct. Lucid saying you don't have to do any of that. Just plant your foot and you go. But we're living in a time of just like stupid fast EVs where you've got the Navara that's got 2,000 horsepower and is stupid quick, and then you've got, you need to haul 4 people? Here's the Lucid for you.
We're seeing the beginning, right? Of course, on last week's episode, we were talking about Dodge with their big debut of the Charger Daytona SRT concept with its Fratzonic exhaust system.
That's stupid.
That's
the worst name.
And you know, after we did that show, I actually did a comparison. I found a nice sound clip on YouTube from the movie The Wraith, classic 1980s B flick movie with a very young Charlie Sheen. And coincidentally enough, the concept car that played the role of the Wraith vehicle was a Chrysler concept car. But in that film, of course, it's a supernatural car, so they gave it this supernatural kind of sound. I played that and then played the sound of the Charger Daytona SRT. Folks, they are shockingly similar. Like, similar to the point where I would almost wonder, I mean, did they borrow that we have nothing on that?
Chrysler, so maybe.
I mean, I'm just saying, that's the thing. Listen to them back-to-back. Judge for yourself. They're different. And for the record, at first I thought, okay, this is kind of weird. But having listened to it more, maybe it's kind of cool. Maybe it's all right. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could be a bridge for moving people from internal combustion to EVs, because that's certainly what Dodge needs to do. What do you think, folks? This is the perfect time for the segue. podcast@motorone.com is our email. Email us your comments. Email us your thoughts. You can go to our YouTube channel, Motor One Podcast, where you can comment on the videos that go up every Friday. You can also listen to us, Motor One Podcast. We're on Spotify. We're on Google. We're on like a dozen different audio platforms. Yeah, you can listen. We're on a lot. Shoot us the email. You can always catch our articles that go up every Friday at MotorOne.com that give a summary of what we talk about in the podcast. We always love to hear from you. We did a lot of comments last week. Mm-hmm. We're going to hold off on comments for next week because right now, this is the moment that I know Bruce and I have been waiting for. We apologize for making you, Ramblers, listen 42 minutes of me and Bruce going on and on and on about these cars that we're never going to be able to own. But yeah, Jeff and Brett, you guys were in very, very exclusive company.
Now it's our turn to ramble about cars
last week.
That's right.
Yeah, but you're at least having that contact. No, you hear about Monterey Car Week and Pebble Beach, and it's a very, very affluent environment. Yes. And that's probably even understating it a little bit. And it's something that few people outside that kind of general demographic really get to experience. So, I mean, share with us a little bit your experiences, since this was a first time thing for you guys at Monterey Car Week. What were the standouts for you?
Well, one of the standouts was how freaking busy we were and how spread out everything is. It's just a chaotic week. But
there were about as many events as a car show, but instead of being in like one convention center and like maybe an annex, it was in three different cities.
Yeah.
A little bit of travel.
A lot of shuttles.
Real quick. So there's Monterey proper. Mm-hmm. There's Carmel by the Sea.
Carmel by the Sea.
Carmel, I'm sorry, by the sea. And then there's wherever Laguna Seca is. I don't know what town that is.
That's also in Monterey. But the other events that they do are in Carmel Valley, which is different from Carmel by the Sea. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Pebble Beach, which is a little microcosm in and of itself. So you're all over the place for sure.
Yeah.
And it's a peninsula that is supposed to support the lifestyles of, you know, several thousand people, and then all of a sudden 10,000 people descend on it and upend the entire process. So
yeah, bad traffic. It was a theme throughout the week. Awful traffic.
And I heard from multiple people that this year it felt like the biggest week ever.
Yeah,
I heard that too. A lot of people were saying that, I guess the COVID slump last year sort of tapered the event down, and even the year before that, it wasn't that busy. But a lot of people that I knew that had been there many times had said that this was like the craziest year they've seen in a long time. So I believe it. I was overwhelmed.
You know, as much as we could complain about the traffic and everything like that, all the logistics of it, man, it was just such a like such a cool thing to see all these awesome cars, vintage and new, converging on one place. It was so fun.
Yeah.
So let's go kind of chronologically. You guys get there what, Wednesday, Thursday?
Which... Yeah.
Okay. I got in Wednesday. And our first event was Legends of the Autobahn on Thursday. Yeah, it's a smaller event. I mean, I didn't even know was a thing until I got there. It's BMW, Audi, some Volkswagens, Mercedes. It's a very German centric show, I guess. But it's very small. It feels like a fancy owners meet almost to an extent. Like there's a lot of really cool classics, but there's a lot of cool modern stuff. A lot of the owners are there just hanging out. Like everyone's super casual. So I like that as sort of like a step in to Pebble and Monterey Car Week. And BMW showed the M4 CSL there for the first time in the US. So that was cool to see that. Yeah, it was, they put it up alongside the 3.0 CSL, which is really cool to see the sort of dynamics between those two cars because they are actually pretty similar in their own way, I guess. And then they had the M1. They had a few other cars, and that was sort of
the original,
a good
first the proper M1. Like,
proper M1. And it was cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Brett, what was your what was your launching point into the week?
I got there a little bit late. I got there pretty late on Wednesday. You know, got checked in and relaxed a little bit on Thursday, and then Thursday night we jumped in with Acura was our host, very gracious for. And we jumped in with a little meet and greet with the Acura Precision EV concept, which, you know, we've got a video on Inside EVs if you want to watch that. We saw the Precision EV concept in person a couple of weeks ago and actually got to see them pull the sheets off for, you know, for Acura, for VIP Acura owners and dealers and stuff like that. So we got to see them have their first reactions to this car that is supposed to be the future styling direction of Acura. So that was kind of cool.
Right. And I think, was it Friday, we found out that the production Acura EV, the first one, is going to be called the ZDX.
Yeah.
I think that was, I think that was Friday. Maybe it was late Thursday.
That was at the Quail on, I think it was late Thursday that they announced it, but then they really did it that the big public splash on Friday. Alongside, you know, that was kind of a cool thing that Acura did was they got booth space at the Quail next to the Koenigsegg, next to the Rimac, next to Bugatti, like... You know, they're loaded for bear. They really want to make a splash, and so they announced the return of the ZDX is going to be their first production EV in 2024. So that's kind of cool. And it won't look like the Precision EV, but it will take some of those design cues. They're very clear about that the Precision EV is a design ethos, not a production car. So
It's just so funny that like you have the ZDX or, you know, the Precision EV specifically next to the Rimacs and the Koenigseggs and the Bugattis and stuff like that. Like, oh, you can buy 10 of these or one of these.
I think their booth was literally right next to Porsche, who was showing the 911 GT3 RS. And then I think it was also Hennessy on the other side who had their Venom F5 Roadster. So you had two extreme sports cars and then, you know, Acura's electric SUV. So it definitely, I mean, it was in a great spot to draw crowds, that's for sure.
Yeah. Location, location, location.
Yeah.
And so for anyone who's listening, I was at Pebble Beach, the Quail, stuff like that in 2017. So I've been there. It's been several years, obviously. So I've got a little bit of an inkling, but can you tell people a little bit about what the Quail is like? Because in my experience, and maybe this has changed, it's a lot of new car debuts, but then there's a lot of like classic cars there as well. Like notably for me, it was me and editor Brandon Turkus who were standing there and someone parked a 288 GTO next to an F40 next to an F50. Yes. And that I remember because it's like, oh, there's $5 million of cars in front of me. So is it still that way? Is it still that mix or have things changed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've got a bunch of different classes. It's, you know, in a lot of they are establishing this as a counterpart to Pebble Beach, where it's a little bit more open. There's not as many class restrictions. They kind of have a lot of different classes, but very similar. I mean, they had dozens and dozens and dozens of Porsche 718 and 356 and 550. Plenty of, you know, Jaguar E-types. There's an Aston Martin DB5. Plenty of very cool, very high-dollar machines. I know that it's not part of the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. That's its own thing completely altogether. Yep. But, you know, they're really trying to establish themselves as a counterpart a little bit earlier in the week, like an amuse-bouche into the rest of Monterey Car Week. So, yeah, it was great. But my favorite thing that I saw was they had a Jaguar. There was a Jaguar E-type there. And the owner had the little flip hatch open, and there was a beautiful color-matched picnic set with Jaguar plates and Jaguar cups and a Bugatti-branded tea kettle, electric tea kettle. So they had their everything covered, you know.
Nice.
They were just there ready to get all the attention from all the owners. It was pretty
cool. I mean, it's nice to hear that, and it's really heartwarming because I've done a lot of car shows in my time. Nothing ever like Pebble Beach or Quail, but that's something that holds true from the top to the bottom. Because how many times have I been at car shows, and even things that I've done myself, where, you know, it's not just about the car. We're adding these little extra touches that are just part of the experience. So it's totally heartwarming to hear that sort of thing at that level. We're all the same.
It's no different. It's just that the stuff you bring with you is branded by Jaguar and Bugatti rather than like the solo cups. That's the difference.
Yeah. They had a big mini display.
Oh, that was cool.
And there was a lot of cool ones, but my favorite was the Ghostbusters themed mini. Was it a countryman? An old countryman?
Yeah.
The guy was dressed up like one of the Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's cool.
That's something that I wanted to ask, because I don't know. I mean, I see pictures of people just dressed normally, but then I see pictures of people like dressed in period attire. Do you see that a lot over the event?
The Pebble Beach Concourse, for sure. There was a lot of people dressed up, not like a ton of people, but there was a good amount of people that had sort of period clothing or really fancy clothing. I know Brett had fancy pants on, so.
Yeah. And speaking of which, can someone send me a picture of Brett's fancy pants? Because that needs to be shared with the world.
Oh, man.
And I'm not joking, by the way.
I have a good picture of him getting into whatever
the Tabalongo.
Tabalongo, yeah.
So basically what you're telling me is that Pebble Beach features cars and cosplay?
You're not sort of. Totally far off, far off base not, in saying
right?
that.
Yeah. Did we just connect Pebble Beach with Comic-Con?
There was tons of some of the guys in like the old vintage race cars showed up in their racing togs with their leather
totally
goggles.
Do it.
And then there was a group of guys. I think I have a picture of it somewhere. There's a group of guys rolling around in a I think it was a Lincoln, an old Lincoln convertible. Three in the front, three in the back, all of them dressed in big wide brimmed cowboy hats, looking like they rolled in off of a very successful cattle sale or something like that. It was great. I mean,
if I ever get my Auburn boat tail speedster that I want one of these days and take it out there, I am rocking the zoot suit.
There you go.
Legit.
Okay.
I could not do it otherwise.
I sent you that picture, Bruce, if you want to bring it up, of Brett sitting in the it's great.
While Bruce is
Brent
doing that,
sent me the picture of the Lincoln folks, and now I gotta find that too, because I thought I saved it, because it was I thought it was a Packard, not a Lincoln, but it very well could have.
I don't remember, I need to go look at the picture again. Actually, I'll do that right now. I'll do some fact checking. Some
Jeff
fact checking on this podcast.
What facts? No, we try to be factual. We're pretty good at that. Jeff, you drove some vehicles, but Brett, you also had some good driving experiences this past weekend, did you not?
Yeah, for sure. They took us around the track in we did a tour lap of the Laguna Seca, which was really cool, at the Rolex Motorsports Reunion on Saturday. We were in the Audi RS e-tron GT, so that was really fun. We did one pretty solid tour lap, probably 50%, and then they amped it up a little bit. We weren't going absolutely, you know, balls to the wall, but we were having a pretty good time behind the wheel. And that was my first time around Laguna Seca. So I actually got to, you know.
Oh, fantastic. Good for you.
What's this corkscrew like?
Okay. So my entire previous experience of Laguna Seca before this was Gran Turismo 3. And I remember driving a Toyota GT1 up over that blind crest and down into the corkscrew and thinking,
so you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
That was easy.
It's incredible how utterly, completely blind you are until you are on that corner's apex. Like, it was insane. We were going, you know, we were probably going, like I said, maybe 60 or 70% tops, and it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. So these guys who do, you know, who do the Zanardi line, I totally understand why that happens, why you just end up cutting through the gravel instead. But it was really cool. That was a really fun experience for sure. So yeah, solid. That was a solid day. Rolex Motorsports Reunion was pretty cool. Did you go to that? Were you there, Jeff?
No, I didn't make it over there. That was one of the things I couldn't make it to. Just
I think we swapped. Chaotic. I think you did. The Legends of the Autobahn, and I did Motorsports. It was cool. They had a lot of really cool stuff. They had this 1953 Austin in the saloon class, and it was a good probably quarter of the horsepower of the rest of the cars in the saloon class. So it was just getting lapped over and over again. And the dude had the biggest blank eating grin on his face the entire time. He was just loving his life. So it was another very cool, like, just people who love cars getting together and having a good time. So that was fun.
BMW was running a lot of classic stuff there just because of 50 years of M. And one of the drivers was on our program, one of their endurance drivers, John, and I forget his last name, but he was driving the McLaren F1 GTR, a $20 million car. And
it was the Fina car, wasn't it?
Yes. And he was telling us how that felt on the track and telling us that, you know, he got a little loose in the dirt one time, and all the while BMW is listening to him and like, please don't crash this car. Please don't crash this car. You're going to cost us $20 million if you crash this car. So that was funny.
They had some legends. They had some really cool. The Fina McLaren was there. Later in the day, they had the Duracell Chevy Camaro Trans Am racer, which was just I had that as a miniature when I was little, so that was kind of hilarious seeing that in real life. It was a cool day. That was fun.
Yeah.
You talked about the guys getting lapped. Just real quick, I remember when I was there, someone was in a newly restored Toyota Sports 800, whatever you want to call it, and he also was just getting lapped because it's 800 cc's versus, you know, it's whatever, like the early 60s class, but again was clearly just having a ball out there with everyone because it's cool cars. It's not for competition, it's just kind of showing off what you got. But yeah. Brett, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it all led to the, you know, the main event on Saturday, which Jeff and I got up real early for, and we headed over. I mean, the main event on Sunday, and we headed over to Pebble Beach for Dawn Patrol, and that was really cool. It was a good experience.
Cool. Well, yeah. Here I'm going to share some of those pictures because I have them. So yeah,
can you explain a little bit what Dawn Patrol is for those who aren't familiar?
Exactly.
Dawn Patrol is It's an event put on by Hagerty, the insurance agency, where these cars are running and driving vehicles. They have to be able to get onto the Pebble Beach lawn in order to be considered for an event. I think even in order to be shown, I might be wrong about that. You might be able to push one on the lawn and show it, but in order to be considered for an award, you have to actually drive the thing up onto the lawn. So Dawn Patrol, you can kind of see some of the pictures. Maybe that I think it's a doozy. Yeah. That one right there. Yeah, that was that car actually driving onto the lawn itself. That was an old Talbot Lago from the
50s. That's the Talbot Lago.
That wasn't the one I said, and that was a different one. But
oh, it's not. Okay, so wait, real quick, people. Here is Brett in his fancy pants, and you can see why we call him his fancy pants.
Look at those. What are you sitting in there?
What vehicle is that? That's a Talbot Lago T150 CSS Fagoni e Falaschi Teardrop. And I know that because I've loved that car for a long time. That's been one of my, like, probably my favorite car in history for several years now. And we were talking about it. Jeff and I were recording some social media on our on the Motor One Instagram, and I mispronounced it. And the man came up and said, no, it's not Talbot Lago. It's Talbot Lago. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I love your car. Good luck. Have a great, you know, I hope you have a good show. This is my favorite car in the world. Best of luck to you. And he's like, have you ever sat in a teardrop? And I was like, no, I sure haven't. And he was like, do you want to? And I was like, yeah, I sure do. I really want to sit in a teardrop. And so he opened the door. He was actually being judged. The judges were at his car, looking at his car. And he kind of like pushed them out of the way and opened the door. Like, it was so cool. It was a good experience. So,
So two things I love about this picture. First off, Brett, dressed to the nines. He's got these cool pants on. He's got his blazer on, a tie. And the guy behind him, you could see, has a flannel shirt, a t-shirt, and jeans. I love that dichotomy. And also, look at how mirror shined the stainless steel is on the door panel. Like, this is clearly a car that was going there to be shown. And like, the guy did every bit of work necessary. And it is just beautiful.
And it paid off because he ended up taking the class win and was in consideration for best in show. So this is, I mean, this is one of the most pedigreed cars in the world. If you care about, you know, interwar and pre-war cars, this is one of the most desirable, valuable vehicles in the world. He's done a beautiful job with it. It's a very, very lovely car. He's based out of Switzerland. His Instagram is the Pearl Collection, the real Pearl Collection. He's got Bugatti EB110s and modern supercars, but then he also has this piece, and it's the crown jewel. I mean, I love it. So,
I love the big grin on your face. You are clearly like a kid in a candy store right now. Just like, exactly.
I sent him an Instagram message to thank him after the fact and kind of like was fishing around. I was like, hey, you know, if I'm ever in Switzerland, maybe we could do a video or something like that. And he was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming out, period, bye. And I was like, okay, I just got blocked probably, but it's all right.
You got ghosted by a rich man in Switzerland.
It's all right. I'll survive.
Nah, not with those pants. You're in. You're in the club, man.
But we were talking about what Dawn Patrol was. We got off track. Jeff, tell the people what Dawn Patrol is.
Yeah, so like Brett said, it's just you get up early to watch all the cars sort of roll onto the lawn because they have to drive onto the lawn to compete. And it's really cool. I mean, you get to see these cars that you almost certainly weren't alive to see in production on the road. And you get to see them driving onto the lawn. You get to hear them. You get to see the drivers who some of them are dressed up. I think if you watch our Instagram video, there was a guy was it a Bugatti? But he was dressed up like a 20s period race car driver, which was super cool. And it's awesome.
What about
awesome.
These oil barons we're looking at? Yeah. I love these guys.
Yeah, that's
six
that's
deep
a good...
in. Is it a Lincoln? Yeah, it is a Lincoln. Yep. I can see it now. Yeah,
Lincoln with the big white cowboy hats.
Yeah,
I love it.
They're wearing matching turquoise jewelry. You can't really tell, but their hats have turquoise bands, and they're wearing turquoise jewelry. It was a whole 1950s Texas oil baron vibe. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Bravo.
So how many cars were involved on Sunday in the show?
Any idea? That's a great question. Let's look it up really fast.
No, because I'm curious. This is obviously a car show on a completely different level from the vast majority of people going to like your local downtown car shows, whether you're going as a spectator or being in the show. I know just from my experience, a lot of people go and enter the car shows with their vehicle, not to win. They just want to be part of the experience. They want to show their car. They love watching people look at their car, talking to people about their car. Is the vibe similar at Pebble Beach, or is every single person there wanting to win?
I mean, I think they want to win, but it's also not like, you know, everybody is very nice. Like Brett said, you know, he got to sit in that car that probably costs millions and millions of dollars, and the owner was just super nice. So it's very like a very fun event for just people to just hang out and look at each other's cars. But there's definitely a competitive aspect of, you know, these are some of the most meticulously kept cars on the planet.
So Jeff, I have a question for you. And this is something, like I said, I've been to this event. It's been several years before now, but it's a memory that I will never forget. And I recommended it for you to do. And I don't know if you did. And so I'm going to share my memory and I recommended it to you. And I'm going to see if you did it as well. And that is after Dawn Patrol, before the crowds really got there, I kind of walked to the very end of the event. And the interesting thing about Pebble Beach is that it is right on the Pacific Ocean. Like, you can literally, and as we were looking at kind of that Alfa Romeo there, you can see the waves lapping at the beach and just kind of going away from the crowd and hearing the waves. And not many, you know, as you know, once like 2-3 p.m. kind of get there, it's packed, it's elbow to elbow. But if you're there early, it's kind of serene. and just like looking off and seeing cars that are worth more than you will ever make in your entire life, but simultaneously hearing these waves lapping against the ocean. And it's this bizarre dichotomy between the nature and what man can do, like the beauty of construction and the beauty of nature that simultaneously exist together in one place. And that's something about the event that I took away that I will never ever forget. And
I just chat, got chills, like, dude. That was insane.
I was gonna say, I couldn't have said that any better myself.
This is the most philosophical I think I've ever been. What are you doing to our podcast, Bruce?
It's true though. Like, you walk away and you just look at literally millions, like millions of dollars of cars. But then at the same time, you just have these waves lapping at the beach, and it's beautiful. It's the beauty about humanity. It's the beauty about nature, and it's all there in one place. And that's what makes it cool to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm the only one that feels that.
No,
way.
No, and no, I agree. There's no way to follow up on that. Couldn't have said it better myself.
I do wish that I would have stopped for maybe a split second more and done the same thing, because we were running around so much that Pebble Beach is amazing. Like, the golf course is amazing. The ocean is amazing. The weather was. It was actually like, a little chilly, but it was perfect. Like, everything about that.
The ocean is right there.
Oh yeah, like, no, you're right on the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just right there, and it's just beautiful to like see like things that man makes, things that nature makes, and they're both right in this spot. Like, it's super cool to me. And
absolutely.
Anyway, clearly I have shut down this conversation, so I'm gonna move this conversation elsewhere. Anyway, you guys got to drive something really cool while you were there, and that is a very cool Mercedes. I'm going to be pulling up some pictures of that right now, and kind of tell me about that. I don't know if you're allowed to tell this because we haven't discussed this. Can you say what you were supposed to drive originally and what you ended up driving? If not, that's fine. Yeah. Like,
we can probably say that we were supposed to drive a Mercedes 450 SE 6.3, and that would have been great. That would have been a very cool experience. It unfortunately developed a slight issue. They were doing heritage drives the whole week. A group of people drove these heritage cars up from the Classic Center in Long Beach to Monterey. So, you know, they'd seen some miles, and this 6.3 unfortunately developed a small issue. They promised they'd get us behind the wheel in a couple of weeks when we have a chance. But they did put us in this absolutely lovely, I think it's a 116, W116 450 SEL. Nice. It was beautiful. It was a great time. We had a really, really lovely 20 minutes just tooling around Pebble Beach in that thing.
Yeah, it was really cool. A full blue interior, blue carpets, blue headliner, blue everything.
Now, what year is that for those that don't know the Mercedes designations?
They didn't say. I think so. This one has the large bumpers, so it's post 74. I think it's probably a 74 or a 75.
Okay.
450 SEL, 4.5 liter V8, just kind of a legendary Mercedes engine the era. It was stellar. They got it from a gentleman who'd owned it for years and years and years. And he got cancer, and when it became apparent that he was going to die, he made sure that his mother kept that car preserved and kept it safe. And so she ended up selling it to Mercedes-Benz for $1. They took it. They did a little freshening, but by and large, that's the condition that it was in when they purchased it. 250,000 miles on the odometer, and it's just an absolute gem.
250,000 on that. That's phenomenal. Yeah.
Super well kept, but it definitely wasn't a garage queen. It'd been driven a lot. Like, it was a really, really cool car.
Well, I mean,
and you guys did a video on that on the Motor One Instagram page that I'm showing right now.
Yes.
Brett's behind the wheel. But yeah, very, very cool stuff. Smith, I'm sorry for interrupting you. Please go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, after all of your experiences in new cars and supercars and hypercars, what's it like to step back in time a little bit with something like this?
I mean, it was cool. The cool thing that I take for granted in old cars is visibility. Like the fact that you could just see 360 degrees around you. You like did not need rear view cameras in that time because you had all the glass. So that was cool. Jeff filmed a pretty funny video on his personal social media of us just playing with all the buttons and all the switches. The weird noises.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, there's so many good like clicks and clacks and knobs you can turn in that car. Like just the window switches in the center console are so satisfying because they're so heavy and springy, and you push them and they give you a good click. And then even the radio control, we were messing with that. The AC vents, you can just, you know, move them back and forth. I love that just like tacky, you know, kind of stuff inside of that car.
Just a very manual, tactile experience.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And it had that typical Mercedes buzz when you turn the key. It made that just really high pitched E sound. And
I know what that is. Yep.
I know that one. Yeah.
You know, and that steering wheel is the size of an extra large pizza from Costco, you know. So, you know, it was great. It was a fun time.
I mean, looking at the pictures in the video, I can almost smell the leather inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can imagine what that smells like.
So real quick, while we're finishing up, Jeff, I want you to tell us about your celebrity encounter.
Oh, which we're looking
at right here.
That was funny. So when we got to Dawn Patrol, there was a good crowd of people there. They kind of just line up around where the cars come in, and we're like, I was with a friend, and we're like, oh, let's walk over to the other side and we'll get a good spot where we can film. And so I'm filming, and if you watched our Motor One stories, there was two of them that I posted with Aaron Paul standing in the background. I didn't even notice until after the fact. And so
Aaron Paul, I love him.
Yeah. From Breaking Bad. You love Breaking Bad.
I've seen every episode.
But yeah, it was funny. He was literally right there in my view, so I had to take this picture of him gawking at whatever blue car this is.
You didn't notice he was there until you like looked at the pictures afterwards, right? Like,
well, until I took the videos.
He posted the videos to the story, and
then I saw him standing there, and I was like, "Oh, let me take a picture."
That's cool.
Yeah, was that the only celebrity you two encountered?
No, actually, at the Quail, well, Brett was there when this happened. Our friend Gabriel Vega from DuPont Registry.
Totally, he's been on the show before.
He taps one of us on the shoulder and he goes, "Oh, that's Brad Pitt," and it's just some guy with long hair walking away. And I was like, oh, yeah, it looks like Brad Pitt, all right. And he's like, no, that's really Brad Pitt. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
There's no verification. We don't know that it was him. But Gabe was pretty convinced that Brad Pitt was tootling around. And, you know, of all the Hollywood celebrities, he's probably the one who's most able to afford a Jesco or a CC850 or a Navara. So he might have been there shopping for his next ride.
Totally. I would believe that.
For sure. No, it sounds like a fabulous experience. As the only person on this panel who hasn't been there, maybe a trip is in store for me next year. And maybe Seth, I will.
Are you listening?
and maybe some of you ramblers will be out there as well. You know what to do. Email us podcast@motorone.com. Say, Smith, I want to go to Pebble Beach with you next year. And I'll respond and say, if I go, it's probably not going to happen, but we want to hear from you. We appreciate you. So email us podcast@motorone.com. What are your thoughts on Pebble Beach, on the whole Monterey Car Week? This year certainly sounded like it was bigger than ever. Having you two, Jeff and Brett, on the ground there, giving us a little bit of behind the scenes. I mean, I've learned a lot today. Hopefully you listening out there, you've learned a lot as well. If you're listening but not watching, you can always go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube, where you can see what we're talking about. You know the spiel. We put up an article every Friday at MotorOne.com. You could also go to MotorOne.com to read about these various debuts, the Bugatti, the Rimats, the Koenigsegg, Lamborghini, and there are even a few others that we didn't have a chance to get to. There were also some auctions that went on, like to the tune of almost $500 million. There's an article at MotorOne.com that takes you over to DuPont Registry that talks all about that. It was a very big auction event this time around. And yeah, we thank the both of you, Brett, Jeff, for joining us. You want to give a quick shout out to what your latest projects are to all the listeners out there?
Yeah, let's start with Jeff since Brett started last time. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Well, I'm excited to finish writing that review of the Remots and hopefully get it published next week. So look forward to my full review next week on that. So
cool. Brett, what's going on with you?
Just stay tuned. There's some cool, we got some cool stuff coming in the next, two or three months as we finish out the year. There's a lot of cool reveals and first drive programs and all kinds of things all over the world. So just be sure to stay tuned to motor1.com and insideevs.com catch all of these new, we're going to have tons of videos and tons of stories coming out. So be sure to stay tuned. I'm not sure what I can say because I think some stuff might still be under embargo. So I'm just going to, I'm going to keep it real vague.
Just nice and teasery.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of stay tuned.
And speaking of teasery, Bruce, there might even be some changes at Rambling About Cars, the way things start and the way things finish. We might be working on that here in a few weeks, maybe with,
Dude, we don't have to be some
music, maybe.
Right, we might have a new song at the beat. Like, no, it's not like I'm leaving, you're leaving. Let's not scare the people.
But that wouldn't be scary. That would be like, oh, thank God.
We might have a new theme song sometime in the future. We're working on a new theme song. That's what's happening.
I mean, as exciting as bum 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 or the intro is.
We are working on a new theme song. I'm still here. Smith is still here.
Yes, everything is safe. No one's going anywhere. We're still trucking along. We're just gonna try to jazz things up a little bit for you, is all.
Right. Exactly. But other than that, as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We love your comments. Eric, I'm not going to say your last name because people get weird about it, but I saw you have a very long email.
Yes.
This episode was full of stuff. I promise you I will address that next episode. It was a great email. We are packed full of content. So Eric, and then also Ted, Alan Green, and Gino Nix, you guys also commented on YouTube. Again, thank you very much. We'll address that stuff next episode. We love our comments. Like I said, we love all that stuff. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always been fun. And bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.